Thanks for spending time with Fusion Community Church through our podcast. These can be accessed anytime through iTunes or on our website, fusioncommunitychurch.org. We hope you enjoy today's message.
We serve in a suburb of Perth, Australia. That's roughly between 7 and 10,000 people, so roughly population-wise, the same size as my hometown. We've been there for 10 years, and we continue to be the only church within the entire community.
The people in Australia, they don't have any idea of the reality of how much is missing in their life without God. And when they see us live out our life, and they see that we're not afraid, or we're not scared, or we have strength when they don't, they wonder where that comes from, and we share with them that that's God.
Our ministry, if you boil it right down, is really making connection so that we can connect people with God. And a lot of times that's just through living life in our community and doing what we can to love people.
The people that we reach through our kids programs, our youth programs, they don't have an aunt, an uncle, a brother, a sister, a mom, a dad, a grandma, a grandpa, or anybody who's ever met Christ. They are the first person in their family, and they are leading others in their families.
Our label is church planters, but we see more ourselves as culture planters, helping people turn on a spiritual switch in their lives.
We're constantly busy connecting any way we possibly can.
2 years ago, we started an Upward Sports camp, and we saw 150 kids this year come to our soccer and cheerleading camp. And on the Friday, we had 43 kids stand and give their hearts to the Lord.
And when we get to go back, we're going to get to see this next generation who is now risen up, and they're now reaching out to more.
My greatest joy is seeing when someone gets the concept of grace and they're willing to submit themselves to that.
We had a lady, and she came knocking on my door at like 8 o'clock in the morning. She came running in with her Bible, and she opened it and she said, "I've been reading all the red words, because that's what Jesus said. So I don't care what else is in there, I'm reading all the red words." And she threw down her Bible onto the table, and she said, "But I just don't get how Jesus can love everybody." She never experienced God's grace. And that moment for her was a huge moment of change in her life, of understanding that God has called us to so much more.
Our supporters from America, the churches and the individuals that pray for us, they are a huge part of our ministry. There aren't words to express the thanks and the gratitude that we have for them.
You are the battery that keeps us going. You are the source of energy. You are the source of life to our ministry. And your letters, your support, your funds, your prayers, that's what keeps us on the field. And there's no place we want to be other than where God wants us to be. And we're just so glad that you're part of the team.
Well, throughout the course of this year, we've been working our way through the story of God, starting at the very beginning, the book of Genesis, and this winter and spring, we kind of came to a close at the end of the Old Testament. Then this summer, we're kind of peeking between the lines. Well, today, we're going to kind of jump forward on the timeline that we've been sharing with you, and you could kind of see this is kind of the graphic we've been using. Creation, we start with creation in the garden, moving up through Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, into Moses in the Exodus, to the conquest of the promised land under Joshua, to the period of the judges, and then into the kingdom of God, right? The kingdom of Israel under King Saul and David and Solomon and the kings, and then their time in exile, then their return back to Jerusalem, and then the period of time of silence before the Gospels, and Jesus arrives, and the Savior of the world is here, and then he ascends into heaven after his resurrection, and he leaves it in the hands of the church. And now we're in that stage of the mission of God until the future begins. And so we're going to kind of jump ahead in that timeline and hear what God is doing, not necessarily right here, but on the other side of the planet. With missionaries that we support in Perth, not New York, but Perth, Australia. Who knows where Perth, New York is, right? Yeah, we used to play softball games there. 10 years ago, we got to have Chris and Melissa and their family join us on a Sunday morning down in our old building on Legion Drive. Would you join me in welcoming Chris back now, a decade later? And before we began, you told me there was one person specifically that you remembered from 10 years ago.
I just want to make sure, am I on? I just want to make sure there aren't any doppelgangers in the room. Because I started my message 10 years ago and Brett Favre walked in.
Yeah.
And sat in the third row. And the whole time I'm thinking, where in the, what?
There he is.
Yeah, there he is. Right there. So I just want to make sure there's not any other doppelgangers before I get going and surprise me in the middle of the.
Thanks for being here with us today.
All right. Great. Thanks.
Awesome.
That video is kind of throwback Thursday for me. You know, it's sort of a five-year-old video, but the truths in there are very prominent and very, very fresh in our minds because that's what we live in every day. I want to start this morning. First of all, let me share, you are our first church on our partnership development journey, which is going to take us to a lot of churches over the next 6 months. And so I have a lot of things written down in here because there's so much that God is doing. So I have no idea what to expect today. But my wife will give me the review later and we'll take things out and put things in. But you guys are sort of, anyway, you might be here. I hope you're comfortable and I hope you have coffee because it might be, anyway. God gave me a verse 15 years ago when he called me to go, called my family and I to go to Perth, Australia and start planting churches. And this is the verse he gave me. It's from Ezekiel chapter 36. And it says this, it says, I will show the holiness of my great name, which has been profaned among the nations, the name you have profaned among them. Then the nations will know that I am the Lord, declares the sovereign Lord. Get this is my favorite part. When I show myself holy through you before their eyes. Now, I want you just to keep that in mind as we begin to share this morning. A lot of people ask us, why in the world would you be a missionary to Australia? Right? Why would you be? The quick answer is, why not? Right? You know, I was called to missions at the age of 16, and my deal with God sort of was, you know, anywhere but Africa, right? Because that's the deal that everybody who's called into missions makes. But God called us to go to Perth, Australia. And when he called us, I thought, man, isn't Australia exactly like America? You know, it looks the same. They talk the same, sort of. I didn't realize I had an accent until I went there. Then I realized I have a very strong one. But God has placed Australia firmly in my heart and firmly in my family's heart. And he's called us to serve him there. But why? Why in the world would we do that? Well, there's a big difference in Australia that is different from here in America. And let me just try to draw you a picture. I shared a little bit on that video. I grew up in a town called Wellsville down in the southern tier of New York. And Wellsville, if you include all of the suburbs of Scio, if you know that area, that's funny. But if you include the whole area of Wellsville, there's about 7,000 people for that area. Okay? And for those 7,000 people, there are around 25 churches in the town for those 7,000 people. And as I've traveled around all over America in different places, I realized that that's not sort of rare. There's usually quite a few churches in an American town for people to choose from or go to. And that's fine. That's great because each church reaches different people and all that sort of stuff. And we went to Perth, Australia on a short-term missions trip with the idea of helping someone start to church plant, start to begin some churches. And when we went there, there was a community called Lansdale of about 7,000 people. And when we went to that community and we began to knock on doors and we began to share with people and meet people, we realized that there wasn't a church in that entire community. And so a community of 7,000 people about the same size as my hometown didn't have a church at all until we started one. And even to this day, 15 years later, the population has grown to about 13,000 in our suburb and we're still the only church. That's the difference between here and there. Australia is a spiritually dry society that's largely, mostly unchurched. It's spiritually dry. Spirituality is nowhere on people's radar whatsoever. And it's completely foreign to us that grew up in America to think that. You know, at least most people in America have gone to Sunday school or vacation Bible school or something sometime in their life. They've been in a church. But people in Australia, it's just nowhere on their radar whatsoever. People don't think about those things. They just don't think about the spiritual aspect of life. Most even aren't open to the discussion or the discovery of the topic. I had a friend once, and I was sharing dinner with him over at his house, and we were just having a conversation, and he was talking about what he does, and I was talking about what I do, you know, as a pastor, and all these sorts of things, and he's, you know, most of the time, the conversation gets shut down immediately. But he was willing to discuss it that night, which was pretty interesting. And so he said, you know, I'm one of those, I'm not sure what you call it, I think you call it an atheist. He said, you know, I just, you know, I don't care, kind of thing. And he said, you know, and then as the conversation went on a little bit, he said, you know, there might be a God, you know, maybe that was, you know, at some point or whatever. And I said, aha, you're not an atheist, you're an agnostic. And I said, you're making progress. Society that's largely unchurched. In our community, there's one church that averages about 20 or 30 people on a Sunday, and it's us. I have a friend of mine that came to church a couple of weeks ago, just before we left Australia. It was our going away. That's what we call it, our going away party. We're going to be gone for 6 months, so we don't have time to have everybody over to our house for dinner, so we're going to have a big dinner after church. So come to church, and we'll share dinner with everybody, kind of thing. And I have a good friend that walked in the back of church, and he walked in, and he sort of was looking down like this, and he looks up, and he looks around, and he turns to me. I was standing there by the door. He turned to me, he came over, and he goes, what do I do now? I said, what do you mean? He said, I have never been in a church before in my life. He's in his 40s. He said, I've never, ever been in a church before in my life. What do I do? I said, well, there's coffee over there, you know, and there's chairs there, and there's people there. You can talk, you can sit, you can drink coffee. What we have is we have a largely unchurched society that is completely lost with the concept of spirituality in church. And God has called us to plant churches where people don't go to church. I'm not sure if that's crazy or if that's job security. So what do we do? What do we do in order to minister and share Christ in a secular, unchurched society? What do? Well, here's what we do. We live our lives. We live our lives in the midst of our community with the purpose of stimulating spiritual curiosity. We look for opportunities where, as we're living alongside people, we can spark something. We can start a conversation. We can get some community engagement so that people will begin to maybe be open to the idea of thinking about spiritual things. We try to figure out, as a church, what our community loves. What does our community love to do? In fact, in other words, what is our community going to do anyway? Okay, what are the things that they love to do, and how can we create opportunities to connect Christ with them through doing that? That's basically our mission, is how do we connect people with Christ through things they're going to do anyway? So what does our community love? A few things our community love. Our community loves community. We're in one of those suburbs where they're trying to sort of stay small suburb feel as the city grows around them. And so they love community things. They love to be part of people doing things within the community. And so they love that. Our community loves sport. Sports is huge in Australia. In fact, our church meets, we don't have a morning service, we have a 5:30 in the afternoon service because football and different things and all of that runs. And sport is very high on people's priority list in Australia, even more than here. People love family. They want to have times where they can connect with their family and love those around them. Our community loves genuineness. Our community doesn't want anything fake. They want something genuine. And so through the years, we've generated ways to connect with people and to give them opportunities to experience spiritual realization through different things. And there's so many things. I won't share all of them, but there's things like Easter egg hunts. You know, you advertise that you're given free chocolate, kids come. You know, 120 at a time, they'll just come. And when we started doing it, we were doing it wrong, right? We realize these things. As church planners, you do things and you go, well, that didn't work, and so we'll do it different next time, okay? And so we were doing it wrong, because what we were doing is we were having our Easter egg hunt. We were having 120 to 150 people come to our Easter egg hunt, and then we'd have a 20-minute break where we thought, yeah, we'll gather and we'll meet people and all that sort of stuff, and then we'll move into our church service. Well, during that gather and meet everybody, everybody disappeared, right? So you'd have 150, and then all of a sudden church time is like 20. It's like, where'd everybody go? And so we got smart, and we said, all right, we're going to do an Easter egg hunt, and we advertise that it's through the church. We're not going to be ungenuine with people. We're not going to apologize for who we are and all that sort of stuff. And so we put the church service right in the middle, right? And so we have, you know, games and activities and all that sort of stuff, and then they go outside and they do the three-legged race things and all that sort of stuff while we sort of convert the room, and everybody comes back in and we have a story time, right? And we share the gospel message at Easter with all of these people, and then we give them the chocolate. See, you learn these things. People love to go camping, and so we try to offer opportunities for kids camps and youth camps and family camps, and anytime we can get away, you know, women's retreats and all that sort of stuff, we try to get people away so that we can just share about spiritual things. Awana on Friday afternoons, that parents love to use as a daycare, which we don't care, we don't mind. Youth group on Friday nights. I was with a pastor in Western New York several years ago. We were out to lunch, and we were having conversations, and he says from across the table, he says, you know, if I was to put together a team to come to Australia, are there things that you could have us do? And I went, oh, you got a notepad? You know, we got lots of things to do. And so we began to brainstorm about things our community loves that we could have a team from America help us with. And we said, man, well, they love sport. And so their church had sort of investigated doing upward sports and all that sort of stuff. And so a few years ago, we started upward sports. And so we were at that time averaging about 30 kids at our Awana program. And so we thought, man, if most of them bring a friend, we could have about 50 kids for a week-long upward camp. That would be awesome. And so we put out the registrations during a school holiday in July and all that sort of stuff. And the first year, we had about 95 registered. The next year, it grew to about 110, and it's grown and grown and grown since then. I think we've done it for 7 years. We had 172 kids this year that signed up, and that was because we ran out of uniforms. We couldn't take any more. And so we were getting emails saying, can we come? We said, we just can't, because numbers and all that sort of stuff. We're only supposed to have 120 in the hall. But don't tell anybody. And so God gives us an opportunity. So how many was it? 170-some kids heard every day throughout a week of the love that they can experience. Australians are very unchurched. It's a very secular society, but they love, you're going to laugh about this, they love Christmas carols. No, seriously, at Christmas time is huge in Australia. People love Christmas carols. They love to sing Christmas carols. They love to listen to Christmas carols around Christmas time. You know, the message of them just goes, you know, over and over. But they love them. And there's these things in the big cities. They call them, you know, carols by candlelight. And they'll have, you know, professional acts, you know, professional singers that come and sing Christmas carols. And it's just sort of like a revolving door of professional acts that come on and sing different songs. And thousands of people show up at these things. And we thought to ourselves a few years ago, well, you know, we could try that. You know, we've got a small sound system. We could take it outside and put it on the grass, and we could invite some people to come and sing some Christmas carols. That'd be awesome. And we thought to ourselves, man, if we have 100 people show up to this thing, that'd be great, because we could share Christmas message, you know, and it would be awesome. Well, the first year we ran it, we had 450. And we went, that was pretty cool. We should probably do that again. Next year we had about 800. That grew to about 1,000 to 1,200 to 1,400. Last year we had carnival rides, jumpy houses, food trucks. We had about 5,000 people in our community that came. And because our church runs it, and I can, I give myself a 10-minute slot in the middle where I can just share about the gospel. I can just share what Christmas is really about. Try to connect Christ into something they're going to do anyway. was sitting in my office one day and I got an email from the school, our local public school. And it said, hey, we're going to run an Anzac Day service at our school. This Anzac Day is sort of like Memorial Day. And so we're going to run an Anzac Day service in the morning just to honor, you know, Anzac Day and all those sorts of things. Would you be willing to come and say a prayer at this? Let me think about it, right? And so I was able to go and share a prayer to, I don't know how many were there, schools of about 900, so there were 900 kids. The next year they asked me to come back, and they said, instead of saying the prayer, can you bring the message? And so for the last several years, I've been able to go and share with the entire school community about a sacrifice that was made long ago on Anzac Day. This last year, I was sitting next to the principal, and after the message, I went and sat down, and he turned to me, and he said, can I get a copy of that? He said, that was really good. I want to use that. I said, yeah, sure. Here you go. I have the privilege of serving as the pastor to the Lansdale community. All right. Not just the church. I have the privilege of serving as the pastor to the community, because guess what? I'm the only one there. And as pastor, it's my desire to not only see people realize that there's a spiritual side to life. I don't want them just to realize their spirituality, but I want to see them grow into fully devoted followers of Christ. And we're constantly striving to implement discipleship pathways for people, to help them, help these new believers grow in their walk with God. And so we've implemented things like D groups, discipleship groups that, you know, we used to do Bible studies where we'd go through a curriculum, you know, a book or something, and we found that after that book was done, people sort of left for a while. And we thought, how do we figure this out? You know, what book should we use? This one's good. And so we have a reading plan that people read every day, and they journal and they share and they get together once a week and they just share life together and talk about the spiritual aspect of life. What is God speaking to me through his word this week? That is a completely foreign question to most people in Australia. What is God speaking to you about this week? And so we get to do that. This one's not in my notes, but I have a D group partner. We meet together every week. And I tell him sometimes, I say, you know, you're an answer to prayers for me. Because for the longest time in Australia, as the only pastor in the community and the only, you know, Global Partners missionary there on the field, you know, sometimes it gets lonely. And I was in a pastor's home one time when I was here in America. And he came in late after the Sunday evening service. And he sat down in the lounge chair and he's just sitting there. He goes, oh, he says, I can never get out of church on a Sunday night. He says, you know, there's old ladies talking my ear off. You know, just sharing about what happened to him this week and all that sort of stuff. And he said, you know, it's a blessing sometimes, but when I want to get out sometimes, it's like, oh my goodness. And I sat there on the couch and I looked straight at him and I said, man, I wish I had an old guy. He said, what do you mean? I said, I wish I had somebody in my church that could share stories about how God's been faithful in his life through many, many years. And he can just share that with me and he can share it with other people. And so from that night, I began to pray, God, bring me an old guy. Several years ago, at our Christmas show that our Awana kids were putting on, Steve walked in the door. Retired gentleman, just retired in Sydney, moved to Perth because some of his kids are there, and walked in and said, hey, I'm here to check this church out. And I said, you know, let's go have some coffee. And so we did, and we've had a coffee every week for the last 4 years. Trying to find ways to develop young leaders in the church. Because I know God has us there for a purpose. I know that he has us there as a church to be the church in the community, but I'm convinced he doesn't want us to be the only church in that community. In fact, there's other suburbs around us that are about the same size as Lansdale that don't have a church within their suburb. And so how is God going to grow his church? Through church planning and different things. It's going to be through developing leaders within the church that he's called right now. And it's not sort of like, all right, let's find somebody and then we'll disciple them for a while and then we'll have them lead when they're older. No, we find somebody and we say, hey, you're going to lead like next week. So come, what can you do? What are your gifts? What do you like? And so our teens and our youth group that graduate out of Awana instantly become leaders at Awana. And so they ride the bus from school and they get off at the hall and they come and they share and they help with kids. And they're developing their ministry skills and their gifts within the church instantly. A few years ago, we were at district conference and we heard a girl talking to somebody else that said, man, I wish I could serve in my church. It's a Tongan church, and culturally there were some barriers there where she was young and, you know, there were some things in that culture and things like that that she just wasn't able to take a leadership role. She could help, but it was hard for her to take a leadership role. And we said, hey, we're not Tongan. You can come and serve and you be our youth pastor. And so she did. She moved into our house for 6 months, moved across the country, and just started an internship program, sort of on the spot. Said, look, we'll help you. And now she's gone back to her church in Melbourne, and she is developing the youth group there, and she's leading it, and God is doing great things through her life. And so we found somebody else to come and do it for now. And she's running the youth group while we're gone. And God is bringing up leaders within the church. And it's so great to see, because my goal is to work myself out of a job. And so when I see leaders come up and begin to minister to others, it's incredible. I will show the holiness of my great name through you before their eyes. Sometimes God surprises us. Sometimes he works in ways that we didn't plan. Most times. Sometimes he does things that aren't on our radar. Right? Things happen. And I want to talk to you briefly this morning about the idea of being in shape. You know, we have a society in Australia, I'm sure it's the same here, where people are obsessed with being in shape, right? They do these crazy run things where you go through mud and climb over stuff, and there might be somebody in here that does that. That's fine. But anytime anybody says, I just went for a run, I say, on purpose? But we're obsessed with the idea of being in shape. In Australia, we're obsessed with the idea of looking physically fit and feeling physically fit and all of those sorts of things. And I want to challenge you this morning that we don't get in shape for the sake of our appearance. Maybe we do initially. But there comes a point when we realize that we don't get in shape for the sake of our appearance, but we get in shape for the sake of our health. We get in shape so that we feel better. We get in shape so that we're properly maintained. Okay, as a type 1 diabetic, there are things that I do that help me to not die. You know, I wear my insulin pump. And I avoid cheesecake like it's the plague, because cheesecake tries to kill me. No, seriously. But I could, cheesecake is good. I could have some. But I know that if I do, then later that night or the next morning, I'm not going to feel well. And so I don't do that for the sake of the way I look. I do it for the sake of the way I feel. And I do it so that my body the next day doesn't go, you're not getting out of bed today. We exercise so that we don't tire when we need the energy. I tried to explain this to a group of 13-year-olds. If you follow our Facebook feed, you'll realize that Dawson and I just had the amazing opportunity, the privilege of representing Australia at the Little League World Series, in the Intermediate League in Livermore, California. And it was an amazing experience through all the tournaments and everything like that. But back in February and March, when the team was just getting together, and we said, all right, what we're doing tonight is we're leaving our gloves and our bats in the bag, and you guys are going to run from here to there and then back, and then you're going to do it a few more times. And what are we doing that? That's not baseball. What are we doing that for? And we said, because there's going to come a time in June when we're at a national tournament, and it's going to be into the seventh inning, and it's going to be really hot, and you guys are going to go, thanks for making us run. You may not feel it right now, but sometime there's going to be a time when you go, man, we're in better shape than the other team. And you know what? There was. There was a game when it was hot and it was close, and it could have gone either way. And I said to the team, I said, listen, all of those laps that you ran months and months ago are going to come into effect in the next couple of innings right now. And they did. And we ended up winning the game. We ended up being able to represent Australia at a World Series. We don't get in shape for the sake of the way we look. We get in shape so we can prepare ourselves for things that come up. When you're in shape and something happens, you get a sickness, you get an injury, you get a disease, something happens to your body. Your body counteracts it. Your body goes into a mode. God has created us in an amazing way where we begin to heal. And injuries aren't as bad when we're in shape as they are when we aren't. And it's an incredible thing. And the same thing is true of our spiritual lives. And we live in a culture that is secular and completely unchurched and not in shape. And when things happen that aren't expected, when God moves in ways that surprise us, God does things in ways that we weren't expecting, and he does things that aren't on our radar and our agenda, then we're able to deal with them. But if we're not spiritually fit like most, then it rocks our world. 1 Timothy chapter 4, verse 7 says, have nothing to do with godless myths and old wives' tales. Rather, train yourself to be godly. For physical training is of some value, some. But godliness has value for all things, holding promise for both the present life and the life to come. Godless myths. I can share with you in two words, well, three words, I guess, the Australian theology of most. There's a saying in Australia, and this goes when anybody thinks about spirituality, spiritual things, this is the statement that most of them use. She'll be right. She'll be right. It's okay. Don't worry. It's all going to be fine. It says, train yourself to be godly. The first way to train yourself is to open your eyes to a spiritual reality around you. We need to be aware of what God is doing in our midst and in our lives, and he wants us to connect with him. What if? What if this life is the generic, temporary imitation? And heaven is the eternal real world. What if? What if this life is the temporary generic and heaven is the real world? When we're spiritually in shape and the reality of eternity crashes into us, which it often does, it crashes into our temporary world, then we're able to, check this out in that verse, hold on to the promise for both the present life and the life to come. I witnessed this firsthand. As I was sitting right there, that video played. I began to cry. Because there's a picture of one of my best friends that suddenly died. Gone. And I don't know where he was. We had discussions. He explored the side of spirituality and all that sort of stuff, but I don't know. I honestly don't know where he was with God. And when we're in shape and the reality of eternity smacks us, all of a sudden we're able to handle things. He was a stay-at-home dad in the community, and everybody knew him. Everybody. I had to find a facility that could seat between 500 and 600 people for his funeral. 500 of a lot of the people that are very close to me, all of my friends, in a room twice this size. And they were all in there. And I had the task of going up and sharing with them that there's a spiritual side to life. There's an eternal side to life. It's not just what we have right here. This is the generic. But heaven is the reality. Heaven is the eternal truth. And so that's our goal. That's what we do. We live our life so that we can help people encounter the spiritual aspect of life. We live to stimulate spiritual curiosity, to connect with our community, to disciple believers, and to develop leaders within our church. So where do we go from here? Why am I here this morning? Well, we're here because we can't do it ourselves. We're here because we need a team. We need people to do things like pray. I can't explain it, but when God's people pray, things happen. It's just when God's people begin to pray, God moves in amazing ways. And it's not anything that we do. It's just sometimes it's, whoa, where did that come from? But when people pray, God moves. And so we're asking today, what the reason why we're here is to ask you to be a part of the team and pray for what God's doing there. Pray that God would open doors. Pray that God would help us to stimulate spiritual curiosity so that people will begin to explore the idea of God. That's my prayer more than, hey, pray that people come and sit in my church. I want them to be discipled. I want them to come. But man, I really just want them to think about God. I want them to read this. And I want them to meet together and say, what's God doing in your world this week? What's God doing in your life? What's he doing for you today? We have a Facebook group that we've set up, and you can talk to my wife about getting on there. It's a closed group, but you can get on there, and we share prayer requests and what God is doing on there, and we'd love for you to be part of that. There's also some white index cards on our table out the back, and you can put your email address on there or your Facebook name, and you can say, hey, add me to that group sort of thing or whatever. Melissa and I will be out there. We can help you with those things, but we just want you to pray. Pray that God would do stuff. That he's been doing it for 15 years. There's no reason why he should stop now, right? We also need people to give. Your church has come on board as a partner, and we are so amazingly thankful for that. That you as a church would support a ministry literally on the other side of the world. My mom says that if we go past our house in Australia, we're on our way back home. We are. We can't get any further away. But we need financial partners in order to continue the work in Australia. If God leads you to give, then give. It's as simple as that. If God leads you to give, then give. I shared about Australia this morning, but the world is a very big place. Global Partners is constantly looking for people to go. And I don't know where you are in your life, and I don't know where God is leading you and doing things in your life, but if God calls you to go somewhere, go. And it may be, hey, I want to come and help kick some soccer balls with some kids in Australia for a couple of weeks. You know, or it may be, hey, God's calling me to Africa. Whatever it is, maybe it's next door. Maybe it's your neighbor. that you're not sure has ever explored the idea of God or spiritual things in their life, or you just don't know where they're at, and maybe he's just calling you to go next door and knock on the door. Say, hey, can I have you over for a cup of coffee? I'd love to just chat about life. Maybe that's your go. But where he calls and when he calls, go. And so this morning, we want to say thank you for being part of the team. I know we were here probably 15 years ago before we first went on the field. We were young and didn't have any of those kids. Michaela was in a car seat. She didn't count yet because she couldn't run. And we traveled the zone meetings that your district used to do for mission nights. And we traveled around each night, and Cobleskill was one of the stops on that, and we shared. And I know some of you have maybe even been praying for us in the ministry there since then. And then 10 years ago, we came and shared with your church, and some of you have been praying since then, and some of you will be praying from today, and we just want to say thank you. We also have some, we went to Walmart late last night and printed these because our prayer cards aren't ready yet because you guys are the first stop. And so we printed these. You can take them home and stick them on your fridge or your dartboard or wherever. I don't care. But wherever you put them, when you see it, pray. Just ask God to open some doors. God to move in some special way in somebody's life. Ask him to do the unexpected, even when it hurts, so that he might be praised and people might come to him. I'm going to have the worship team come back up. And I just want to close in prayer. I want to thank God for you. One of the things, you're called prayer partners because you're not just praying for us, but we love to pray for you guys as well. And I have a confession to make. I've been to your church a lot of times because you guys are on, you know, Facebook Live and all that sort of stuff. And we're 12 hours ahead of you. And sometimes, you know, 10 o'clock at night, after we've had our service and I'm at home and I'm scrolling through Facebook, I think, oh man, they're in worship. So I turn it on and I worship with you guys from the other side of the world. So we just want to say thank you for being who you are. Thank you for being part of the mission of what God is doing, not just here in Cobleskill, but on the other side of the world. God, thank you for your people here. Thank you for your people on the other side of the world. Thank you for all of those people that haven't heard yet. Thank you for all of the people that are spiritually unaware of anything going on around them. God, I pray that you would help us to live our lives in the midst of our communities to stimulate spiritual curiosity, so you'd give us opportunities to connect people with you, because that's what it's all about. It's not about us. It's all about you. And so God, as we stand, as we worship you today, I pray that you would just give us maybe a name, maybe a person, maybe somebody that we just pass in the hallway at work all the time, Lord. Somebody that you just say, hey, I really want to connect with that person. Will you go over there and live life with them so that they'll have an opportunity to hear about me? God, do that work in our hearts, even today. And it's in your name we pray.